Hello and welcome to Saving Animals with Blank Park Zoo. I'm Ryan Bickle. On today's show, we have a very special guest. We were just saying that Leland here is probably the guest from the farthest distance we've ever had on the show. Leland Brown, the non-lead hunting education coordinator from the Oregon Zoo. Thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And of course, Jesse Lowry's here. And Jesse, why don't you start today's show?
Thanks, Ryan. I'm Jesse Lowry, the Director of Conservation and Research here at Blank Park Zoo. And I always like to start the show by laying the foundation of what the role is of a modern zoo to save animals in the wild. Our mission is to inspire an appreciation of the natural world through conservation, education, research, and recreation. And I see the zoo as a window to the wild, a place where we can invite the community to come and see, look into the eyes of a snow leopard, see the amazing agility of a sea lion, and feel that sense of awe that we all feel when we see these beautiful animals. But then our job as a zoo is to turn that sense of awe into a real conservation action, a behavior change, something that's actually going to make a difference to wildlife around the world and right here in Iowa. The zoo works on conservation in many different ways. We try to be as green as possible because sustainable actions have a direct result on our native animals here in Iowa. We work with local partners on a pollinator conservation project. We remove invasive plant species from local parks. But really the backbone of what a zoo can do to help endangered animals across the world is that financial and in-kind support of the field organizations out in the range countries of the animals that we have here at the zoo. So we work with Giraffe Conservation Foundation to conserve giraffe in Namibia. We fund the International Rhino Foundation, of course, in honor of our eastern black rhinos that we have here at the zoo, and also send our staff to work for these field programs. But one thing that we always want to stress is that a portion of every dollar made at Blank Park Zoo goes to these projects to help save animals in the wild. So every time you come visit, if you're a member, if you get married here, if you come to Zoo Brew, you are part of the solution to help save animals in the wild. And if we want to get the most bang for our buck to save wildlife, taking care of our local environment is the way to go. And that's why we have Leland Brown here all the way from Oregon Zoo, is to talk about a new initiative that we're starting here at Blank Park Zoo that he's been working on for a long time. We have started our Iowa Hunters Leading the Way campaign. And like I said before, we're always wanting to give people these practical, simple, easy actions that they can do in their own life that's going to make a difference to wildlife. And one of those easy things that folks can do, that hunters can do, which there's a lot of hunters in Iowa, is to use non-lead ammunition, especially in our state's deer hunting activities. And like I said, Leland's been working on this issue for a long time. And so, Leland, again, welcome to the show and welcome to Iowa.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's been a good time.
Great. Well, why don't we start out by just tell us a little bit about your background and how you ended up working on this campaign at Oregon Zoo.
Yeah, sure. I started as a field biologist. I was working mostly with invasive species, so doing wildlife control work with feral pigs and goats and other animals that really have some real damaging effects on ecosystems. And a lot of that involves using hunting as a tool to manage those feral populations. And so I was working a project in California at what was then Pinnacles National Monument, and they asked me to remove feral pigs off this new area that they had acquired, which was a new type of habitat for the monument. And because that was also a release site for the endangered California condor, we were required to use non-lead ammunition. And I was kind of unaware of that. So I didn't really know why. I didn't understand the reasoning. And as a biologist, I was a little surprised when I started looking at the research and saw all the information on how much lead fragmentation from hunting can actually impact scavengers. And I was a little taken aback that I didn't know about it. And I wanted to make sure that as I move forward, I could share that information. And actually, as part of that job was conducting outreach in California, because there's that population of really endangered bird. I mean, they were down to 24 in the world or something like that in the 80s, to share with hunters in California about how to make that switch and make it work for them, because I was using that consistently to hunt and take animals, and there was a new regulation passed that required people to use non-lead. So that was really my intro into it, and really I've stayed with it despite passing through a couple of different jobs since then. I moved to Hawaii for a while and was doing feral invasive species work, and then this job came up in Oregon for the Oregon Zoo. And I was a little surprised to see a zoo getting involved with this issue, just because you don't really associate zoos and hunting a lot of the time. But like you said, after talking with the folks at Oregon Zoo, meeting with some of them prior to taking the position, realized really zoos are a gateway for people to engage with wildlife, and includes hunters. So it's a great position for zoos to share information and be a trusted source of information that can really be helpful to provide, like you say, a very clear and concise pathway for a conservation action.
So let's start to talk about some of the verbiage that we use when we talk about this issue of lead in wildlife and hunters as conservationists, and how they're playing a role in making sure that our ecosystem can really run smoothly, Iowa and across the nation. First, let's talk about, you said fragmentation of lead ammo. Let's talk about what that means and how lead ammo compares to non-lead ammo. And many of our viewers are hunters themselves and are well aware of this, but some folks might not be. And the mass majority of hunters in Iowa will be using slugs to hunt deer, which is the most popular hunting activity in Iowa. And likely the most popular slug type is lead in Iowa. So go ahead, Leland.
Yeah, I mean, very likely that lead is the material of choice for most ammunition. And generally, it's going to be a copper-jacketed projectile for deer hunting. It's going to be a single projectile that goes out there, and when it strikes the animal, it will expand. And that increases the amount of damage that happens to the internal organs. So you're making sure that when the animal is shot, it's killed as quickly and humanely as possible, so it doesn't suffer, it doesn't escape, and the hunter can actually recover it and make use of that meat, which is required by law in the United States to use all the meat, and it's part of the North American model that's been so successful at conserving and recovering a lot of the big game and other species here in North America. So when we're talking about the difference between a non-lead and a lead bullet, like I say, a lead bullet is generally a copper-jacketed lead cord projectile. A non-lead bullet for, say, big game hunting is generally a pure copper bullet. So instead of using two materials, they make just the bullet out of a single copper piece. They can engineer the expansion into there so it causes the damage it needs to and is very effective, can actually create a very high performing projectile for hunting. And a lot of people, once they try it, they realize that they've really come across something that is often a much better projectile than you would see with lead, just due to some consistency and penetration and some of the performance characteristics that we're really looking for when we're hunting a game animal.
And so when we're talking about Iowa-specific hunting activities, folks who are using a shotgun would have a choice between a copper slug and a lead slug. And when they use a lead slug, it will fragment. Mostly when it hits bone, but when it hits the animal after expansion, it'll fragment into an average how many pieces, and how big are those pieces?
Well, if you're looking for shotgun slugs, it's not a huge number of pieces, but they're pretty small. I mean, there's been some research out of Minnesota where they actually did some testing on sheep carcasses and were able to test fire both rifle ammunition, shotgun, and muzzleloader ammunition into those sheep carcasses at a set range in a controlled study. And so you're seeing on average, I think, with shotgun, and I'll apologize if I get the numbers wrong, but it's in the, you know, tens to 50 or something with a shotgun slug. It's not a huge amount, but they tend to be pretty small because as it expands, the bullet's pushing through all this tissue and it's stripping off the edges. And of course, because these are small pieces, they're more easily consumed by wildlife because they're not detected while the wildlife is eating the remains of that animal that gets left in the field.
And that's exactly why Blank Park Zoo and Oregon Zoo is talking about this issue. because we want to make sure that we're doing all that we can to protect wildlife and help inform everybody what they can do in their own life to help protect wildlife and ensure the future of wildlife and regulated hunting. And we'll get to, you know, all of the different ways that regulated hunting, especially in Iowa, really contributes to wildlife conservation in just a moment. But I want to really talk more about the effects of lead. When it fragments, it's often left in the field. So a hunter will use a lead ammunition, and then they'll go ahead and field dress their animal and leave some of the remains of the animal in the field, and that becomes a valuable food source for what kind of animals?
Well, we're talking mostly with the exposure for wildlife. We're talking about raptors, so your bald eagles, any golden eagles, hawks, things like that. And with the avian species, with birds, it's a bit more of a problem just because of the way their digestive system works, because they have pretty acidic digestive systems to deal with all the bone and everything else that they eat. And also just the way that it's designed, the shape, the lead can actually sink to the bottom of their stomach or gizzard, and then it can't get out. And so it'll just sit there and leach out, and they can end up being poisoned from that. And like we were saying, those fragments, because they're small, they can be dissolved pretty quickly. Whereas a big piece may actually hold together better and not cause as much problems. So the smaller the pieces, actually the bigger the problem.
And when you think about our national symbol, the bald eagle, you know, this charismatic animal that brings together people from all demographics, you know, because of their high mobility and their foraging strategies and their excellent eyesight, they will be soaring high above these hunting grounds throughout Iowa and spotting these gut piles and using them as a valuable food source. And unfortunately, some are going to have these lead fragments in it. And even though the hunter has made careful attempts to take out all of the lead, sometimes they just can't detect where the lead has been left in.
Yeah, really, without being able to X-ray the animal, it's going to be really difficult to find all those fragments. And even with an X-ray, you probably won't be able to find them all, because you might know generally where they are, but you're just, you know, you're digging through tissue and blood and bone and trying to find these very small pieces, and they're going to get away from you. You know, like you say, you gut the animal. The reasoning for gutting the animal is, one, you want to lighten it up so you can carry it out. And then, two, you want to cool the meat down so it stays good. So it makes a lot of sense to gut the animal in the field. And it's also a really important food source for a lot of these species. I mean, bald eagles scavenge a lot on deer during the wintertime. It's a really important food source for them. So we want to make sure that that food source is there. We just want to make sure that it doesn't end up having lead contamination and causing a harm that's unnecessary and unintended, of course.
And folks in Iowa are just elated to see how many bald eagles that we have in the past couple decades. And I know a lot of folks remember growing up not seeing any eagles, and the way that they've come back to the state, especially in the wintertime, is amazing. You can go downtown Des Moines right on the river and see 50, 60, 70 sometimes bald eagles. And at a population level, you know, maybe some problems like we're talking about lead in wildlife, maybe it isn't having a population level effect right now. But Iowa does have 1/3 of the global population of bald eagles. And so what we want to do is to ensure that they continue to thrive. And like you said, ensure that these valuable food sources that are left out in the field are something safe for them.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, the other thing is, there's been some recent research that shows that lead exposure, even if it doesn't kill an animal, can actually have impacts on their behavior. You know, there was a new study this past year that came out of Europe that was looking at golden eagles, and very low levels of lead exposure actually changed how far and how high those animals will fly, which can, you know, you're talking about wild animals that require all of their skills and abilities to be at the top level in order to survive. And if we're causing impairment to that, we can actually create some risk that maybe they aren't as capable as they would be otherwise. So we want to make sure that, you know, as hunters, I believe hunters are really strong conservationists. I know that we are, because we have passed laws on ourselves to ensure that we conserve wildlife. We fund the vast majority of wildlife conservation in the United States at the moment. I mean, we do a ton of work, all the volunteers that go out and work on habitat to make sure that there's good quality habitat for wildlife. This is just one more step that we can take where we can ensure that we're doing everything we can to be the best conservationist possible.
I want to talk about a little bit more in detail the role of hunters as conservationists. And then I also want to touch on, for the hunters who are listening to this right now, where they can get information about ammo for their gun. So first, let's talk in detail about all the different ways that hunters are such an important piece of the puzzle of wildlife conservation in Iowa and nationwide.
Yeah, so there's a couple ways. I mean, one is to go hunting, you have to buy a hunting license. And in the vast majority of states in the U.S., our natural resource agencies are really funded through hunting and fishing license dollars. And that's used to both directly fund work, but then also to provide match for federal grants and taxes that are out there. So there's the Pittman-Robertson Act in 1937 is an excise tax that was initially passed on just firearms and ammunition and was expanded a couple times in the 20th century to include, you know, pistols and bows and arrows. And that goes into a fund on the national scale that gets distributed out to states, and it's dedicated for wildlife restoration. That money can't be used for anything else. So people who are out there buying ammunition, buying firearms, they're really funding this great, great amount of resource and dollars that goes back into conservation. And a lot of those hunting license dollars are used to match, because there's a required match for that federal grant program where states have to provide 25% of the dollars for a program. And a lot of those hunting license dollars are used for that. Of course, the public invests as well. I mean, you pay your taxes. I'm sure that in Iowa, a certain portion of your general fund is going back into your agency. But yeah, I know in Oregon, that's a small portion of it. The vast majority of that funding really does come from hunting license, fishing license dollars, and from those federal grant programs and federal funding that the states can apply for.
Let's talk for just a moment about the role of hunters in resetting the ecosystem, because we've taken out all of the predators in many parts of the U.S., certainly here in Iowa. Can you speak to that a little bit?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, anyone who, we were driving down the road yesterday and you see a deer running across left and right. And, you know, without predators, you can have ungulate populations that really are overpopulated. So they're, one, a risk to people just driving around. They're also eating themselves out of food. So there needs to be some sort of regulatory mechanism on those population. And without natural predators, we really have to help to manage that. And hunters are a great way to do that. And also at the same time, they have their own benefit of providing food for their families and enjoying the outdoors and being engaged as wanting to conserve, because they have a vested interest in making sure that there's wildlife and habitat out there.
And we were speaking last night, Leland, about, you know, just the state of wildlife around the world. And we often talk on this program about rhinos in Africa and giraffe and hornbills. And just like with those populations, everything has to be managed these days. We have tinkered with nature so much, and there is, you know, humans encroaching on habitat and converting landscapes to such a degree that all animals and habitats are at a point where they need to be managed. And this is an important point to be made about the role of hunters, especially in a place like Iowa. Let's go ahead and talk about, for the hunters who are listening and for the folks who are family members of hunters, so they can share this podcast with them, this radio show with them, what are the steps to take if they are a hunter and they're using lead ammunition? What do they do first to make the switch?
Well, the first thing you have to do is a little bit of research, because you really need to know what's out there, what's available for you to try. So there's a couple of sites you can go to that get you some good basic information. Huntingwithnonlead.org is one of those. It's got a good base of information. It has information about the research that's out there, how to go through that switch process. One of the things you'll notice is if you go into a store, you may or may not be able to tell what's what. So you have to try to find, and we have some information that shares what manufacturers are making non-lead ammunition and what those bullet models are, because you may not be able to identify those right off the bat. And unfortunately, sometimes you go in a store and even the salespeople aren't real familiar. That's the first step. Identify what is actually non-lead ammunition so you can try it out. Then from there, you really want to, same as if you were switching to, or you bought a new rifle or a new shotgun and you wanted to try stuff out, you have to try a couple different things and find what shoots the best in that particular rifle. So you want to match your grain weight and length to the twist rates to make sure that it's accurate. And then from there, really, you can go hunting. But there is that process, making sure you go to the range and you're testing things out prior to going out on a hunt, so that when you go on the hunt, you have the opportunity to be successful and you're not fighting your equipment.
And so huntingwithnonlead.org is a great website to go and look up your firearm and see what's available. Is that right?
Well, you might not be able to look up your firearm directly, but it'll have a resources about the different manufacturers and what sort of stuff that they're making. And if you're looking for other information, I mean, Oregon Zoo also has, we have a PDF on our non-lead portion of our website that shows in a little bit more detail what's currently available. We try to keep that as up-to-date as possible, but things are constantly coming out that maybe slip under the radar. Do a little bit of research on your own as well to make sure that you're not missing something that might be worth trying out.
So let's talk a little bit more about, and we alluded to this, about what are the obstacles for hunters in the state of Iowa to make the switch. Let's talk about cost and availability a little bit more, and just tradition. A lot of folks are kind of used to the lead ammunition and how it fires. And let's just address all of those specifically and how to overcome those obstacles.
Yeah, so we'll just start with cost, maybe, because that's one that comes up a lot. People are really concerned about the cost. You're talking about copper, and everyone hears copper, and they go, oh, copper's really expensive. I mean, that's not going to work for me. But really, the ammunition, if you look at good quality lead ammunition and the non-lead ammunition, you're paying about the same price. And the performance level that you get is well worth that price. We actually did a little bit of shooting yesterday to test out some muzzleloader bullets, and the consistency and performance that you get with non-lead ammunition, to me, is absolutely worth the money. I want to know exactly what my projectile is going to do when it hits the animal. I don't want any surprises. The only thing I want to be worrying about is whether I'm going to place that shot accurately, due to my own flaws as a shooter, not the performance of the actual equipment.
And that was very interesting. We did an ammunition trial yesterday and shot three lead projectiles with the muzzle loader and three copper. And you're right, the lead looked different every single time. Can you talk about that just a little bit?
Yeah, and I mean, that may have just been a bit of a fluke, but you're talking about multiple different materials and the manufacturing process and everything, whereas with copper, it's a single material, and the consistency in that material allows for that consistency of performance, and you don't have as much risk of having a bullet come apart on heavy bone or something like that, which could actually end up making your shot wounding an animal or something like that, which we really, that's my worst nightmare and most people's worst nightmare when they go hunting, is wounding an animal and not recovering it.
And so what you're saying is that although copper might be a little bit more expensive, because of its high performance, you will perhaps offset that cost by being more accurate with your hunting with that ammunition.
By being more accurate and by ensuring that as that bullet actually strikes the animal, you know exactly how it's going to perform. And so you're not dealing with questions at that point. I mean, if you have a bullet that doesn't perform consistently when it strikes the animal, you're not certain how well the animal's going to be killed each time. For me, I really want to have no questions about any of that. I don't want to have questions about whether my stuff's accurate, which is why you need to go to the range first and test stuff out and figure out what shoots the best. I don't want to have questions about how the terminal performance of the bullet is, because once that bullet strikes the animal, I want to know exactly what it's going to do and what to expect. And with the non-lead, with the copper bullets, which I've been using since 2010, I don't have any questions. I know exactly what's going to happen.
And so for availability, just to review on that, are folks going to be able to go out the couple days before hunting season start and just go to their store that they always shop at and find something? Or are they going to need to have to start a little bit earlier with the research process?
They should really be starting quite a bit earlier. I mean, if this is your first time testing it out and making that switch, you really want to put the time in ahead to try stuff at the range and make sure it's accurate, and also to make sure that you can get it, because it is a smaller portion of the market right now. There's not as much out there. Like you say, most of the slugs and muzzleloader bullets that are out there are made of lead. Most people are familiar with that. So you'll really want to start maybe in the spring and start going to the range and testing a couple things. And if you find something that shoots really well right off the bat, great, perfect. If not, maybe try a couple different things through the summer and make sure that you really got everything lined up prior to the hunting season starting.
And you mentioned the range a couple times. Should we be worried about folks going out with the lead ammo that they already have, that they've already bought, and using it at the range?
No, I don't think so. I mean, there's certain ranges out there maybe that run into issues, but the vast majority of ranges have been sighted properly. They've got really good mitigation of all that. They can actually go through and mine out all the lead at the range and recycle it, which is great. You know, that's just more recycling. And they can actually make a little bit of money for the range to help keep a nice safe place for people to practice their shooting. So I would say if you have a bunch of lead, go to the range and practice with it. Make sure all your mechanics are really good and solid. Your technique is good. But then when you're going to go shoot an animal, and whether it's a food source for us or for wildlife, you really want to make sure that we're not introducing the lead into that where it can be a toxin and cause some unintended consequences.
Thank you so much, Leland. Where can we go to find out more information about your project at Oregon Zoo?
Well, you can go to the huntingwithnonlead.org is a great resource. People just looking for information about non-lead ammo. But if you want to look really about the hunting, non-lead hunting education program, you can go to the Oregon Zoo, and on the conservation and small actions, there's a non-lead section they can check out.
And I want to say for our project here at Blank Park Zoo, it's called Iowa Hunters Leading the Way. You can access it through iowaleadingtheway.com or blankparkzoo.com. And this project would not be possible without a grant from REAP, from Resource Enhancement and Protection. Please check it out. We've made a couple displays that you'll be seeing around the state. And again, Leland, thanks for being here today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Thanks so much for being here. And if you want to learn more about Blank Park Zoo, head over to our website at blankparkzoo.com. And you'll learn all about our conservation initiatives, our new lead education program, as well as Plant Grow Fly, our pollinator program, as well as the other conservation initiatives we have here at Blank Park Zoo. Of course, you can learn about our events and all our fun activities and our hours and all that sort of thing, how to become a member at blankparkzoo.com. Well, that's all the time we have for today, so we'll see you next time on Saving Animals with Blank Park Zoo.